love Lucy.
And I'm Diana, and I, you know, like Lucy.
And this is My Favorite Redhead, the podcast where I show Diana every I Love Lucy episode in order, and then we discuss them together until she and all of you love Lucy too.
This week's episode is number 31, The Publicity Agent. The episode opens with Ricky playing solitaire, and Lucy wants to call the Mertzes up to play, but he's moping. He doesn't want to see anybody, and he doesn't want to play cards because he's in the dumps because his career is stalling. So Lucy's like, well, what's wrong with you? And he's like, well, you know, nobody talks about me anymore. I'm not the big thing anymore. And she's like, don't you have a publicity agent? And he's like, yes. But, you know, if I paid him $50 a week, you'd think he could do something. And Lucy was like, you need a publicity... $50 a week? You need a publicity agent? You need somebody who's really enthusiastic and knows how to, like, pull scams and whatever? And he was like, oh, I mean, no, it's fine. I mean, I don't want anybody talking about me. It's fine. Please don't tell anybody you know me. So the next scene is Lucy's inventorying her jewelry, and Ethel comes in, and they're talking about Ricky's career stalling, and Lucy's, like, planning a fake heist of her jewelry to get him in the papers as a victim of crime.
Yeah.
So, you know, insurance fraud. And so they're brainstorming other ideas to get Ricky into the papers. And then Lucy thinks about, hey, what if we had some famous member of foreign royalty who's obsessed with Ricky and wants to come out to New York to hear him play in person? And so they kind of are spitballing this idea for a while. They're planning on somebody from the Middle East or the South Asia area. And so they're debating what the terminology is for different people in royalty over there. And they come up with Maharensis.
Mm-hmm.
So they invent this character, Maharensis Scheherazade of Franistan. And Lucy calls up the Waldorf Astoria, is it, to get a room for mm-hmm. her. So she uses an accent because she's pretending to be the Maharensis's mother, mm-hmm. the Maharani of Franistan. And she makes sure to tell the people, you know, don't tell any of the papers that she's coming because the Maharaja is upset about her being here and she just wants to come to the club to see this show and she doesn't want to be bothered. So please, please don't tell the papers.
Yeah.
So the next scene is they're at the club and Fred visits Ricky to show him the paper where it says the princess is coming to see him, of course. Ricky doesn't believe it and thinks that his agent is responsible for this ridiculous story, and even, I believe, mentions at one point that only an idiot would believe mm-hmm. that story. And Fred is like, well, whatever. Kenny, the agent, calls Ricky, and Ricky rakes him over the coals, but it turned out that Kenny didn't have anything to do with it at all, and Ricky completely falls for the story because if Kenny is not behind it, then it must be true, because he doesn't know anyone else who would be up to that sort of shenanigans.
He doesn't know any shenaniganster.
No, nobody. Certainly not anyone related to Fred, who's sitting right there.
Yeah.
So, he and Fred muse over where Franistan is in a sort of, like, I'm sure we've all been there when somebody's like, do you actually know where Azerbaijan is? And you're like, duh, it's right there.
It's you over know, there.
It's, what was it, between Switzerland and Persia?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we've all done that.
It's like on The Simpsons when they try to narrow down which states border Springfield, and they're like, oh, it's Massachusetts and Colorado.
Yeah. So the reporters come to the club, and they want to talk to Ricky, and he mentions that this is going to be a command performance, so it's pretty much just going to be him and the princess, and he's worrying about, you know, how they're going to perform for this person of royalty. And Fred comes in, and he says he called the house, it's called the apartment building, but Lucy and Ethel are out, so unfortunately they're gonna miss seeing the princess. So then there's a big to-do because the princess has arrived, and the princess is, I'm gonna say, handmaiden?
I think so.
Yeah. Comes in with a gong, and she's in dress, and she announces that the Maharensis is coming, and then the Maharensis arrives in dress, and Ricky bows to her and leads her to this throne that was, I don't know if that was disinfectant or perfume. What was it that the handmaiden was spraying all over the throne?
I'm not sure. Probably.
Yeah, probably perfume.
Yeah.
Or a smelling salt, because later they're used to smelling salts. So something strong, whatever it is. So the Maharinsis settles herself in the throne, and this conversation is very awkward. There's a lot of bowing, there's a lot of accents, and a reporter is allowed to ask some questions, but Ethel cuts him off before he gets too political, because they don't want to, like, narrow down where exactly Franistan is.
Since it doesn't exist.
Yeah. So then Ricky starts to play, because, of course, he's performing for royalty, and the Maharinsis faints. But then she's revived, and then he plays again, and she faints again. So this goes back and forth. And the first song was very cute. I'm sure you're going to talk about it. It was very cute. And of course, the second song is Babalu, because of course it's Ricky, so he has to do Babalu. So, and that's how the scene ends, is him going into Babalu. Back at I assume the Waldorf.
Yes.
The girls actually got a room
mm-hmm.
at the Waldorf. Oh, and the performance scene is very funny, because Lucy is like fully Lucy, but with like heavy black eyeliner and a black wig. But like, she still, like, overdraws her lips like Lucy, and she has those enormous eyes. Like, so I'm like, I can't imagine that this man, her husband of 10 years, is staring her in the face.
And he's right in front of her, too.
He's, like, inches away.
Distance.
No. So, anyway. Back at the Waldorf, the girls are pooped. They pooped out of the party. And they're complaining about how tired they are. And they're getting ready to go home when a man shows up in dress. And he's looking for the princess. And he descends on Lucy in the bed and warns her that things are going bad in Franistan. And she has to, you know, save herself. And she reveals to herself that she's Lucy Ricardo. She's not the Maharinsis Scheherazade. And he's like, no, 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 I know it's you, because you have the royal mark of the black hair and the red hair. And she's like, what? So Ethel, like, fully believes him. And then someone else knocks, and these two masked men barge in, and they kill this dude who turned out to be the chief of secret police.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they kill him, and they pump Lucy for state secrets, but of course she doesn't know any, and they identify her as a member of the royal family by her red hair and her black hair, and it's just, it's getting more and more out of control, and they keep saying, you know, the tiger is coming, and he's a master of torture, and Ethel just completely pieces out of there. She's such a good friend. This is like the second time that Lucy's been in mortal peril, and Ethel's just been like, well, bye, bitch.
Yeah.
So, but the men stop her, and of course then the tiger arrives, and he's in dress. And the assassins bow and scrape, and hail tiger, and all of that. And he approaches Lucy and rolls his sleeves up, and she's like, hail tiger! And he picks up the dagger and then reveals himself as Ricky, and of course the chief of secret police is Fred, which I clocked immediately, because I'm very good.
You're paying attention.
Yeah, keen powers of observation. Yeah. And so Ricky reveals that he knew practically all along that this was a big stunt by Lucy. And Ethel is like, this isn't funny, guys. This is really scary. And Lucy was like, what? You were scared? I wasn't scared. And then she faints.
That was the episode. Alrighty, guys. This episode aired May 12th, 1952, and was filmed on April 4th, 1952. It was written by Jess Oppenheimer, Madeline Pugh, and Bob Carroll Jr., and directed by Mark Daniels. So, when Lucy tries to get Ricky in the news with her priceless jewels being stolen, that was actually inspired by a real-life event that had happened to Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Oh.
They were staying in a hotel room in Chicago, I believe, and their hotel room was robbed, and her jewelry was stolen. And apparently Eunice Kennedy was robbed of her jewelry in the same hotel less than a month before that, and they think it was the same thief, and I don't know if they ever caught the person, but that was interesting.
Didn't Kim Kardashian get robbed in a hotel room?
Yeah, but, like, at gunpoint.
Yeah. That's scary.
In this incident, they weren't in their room when it happened. Someone
that's good.
Snuck in when they were out, so they weren't in any physical danger. But, yeah, so that was a thing that happened. And Lucy's jewelry, being valued at $43, is worth about $460 today, which, you know, that's a good amount of money, but it's not exactly priceless.
No.
Lucille Ball's jewelry, in the real incident, the real robbery, Her jewelry was worth over $4,000 in 1950,
ooh, wow,
which is worth around $48,000 today. So that's a lot more priceless, yeah, than Lucy Ricardo's. So
they, but did Lucille get Ball was actually a famous performer.
She was.
Lucy
she was
Ricardo
very
was just a wife.
Lucy Ricardo is just Lucy Ricardo. So Lucy actually plays a similar character to this in an episode of The Lucy Show, this Maha Rinses character.
Uh-huh.
I actually haven't seen that episode of The Lucy Show, but from what I understand, she does like a similar voice. I've seen like a good handful of The Lucy Show episodes, but I've never just like watched all six seasons, so that would be a project, I think. So we get another mention of Ricky's press agent, Kenny Morgan, and that's a character we saw before in the episode Men Are Messy,
mm-hmm,
and he was played at that time by the actor Kenny Morgan, who is married to Lucille Ball's cousin Cleo.
Mm.
And she and Cleo were very close. They're practically like sisters, so that's cool. So Peter Leeds played the reporter. He was born in 1917, and he went on to become a character actor. And he actually has over 8,000 TV appearances,
wow,
on his resume. He had spots on Dragnet, Perry Mason, The Untouchables, and Mr. Adams and Eve, with the I Love Lucy guest stars Ida Lupino, Howard Duff, and Hayden Rourke.
Hmm.
Different episodes. We've already seen the Hayden Rourke one, but. And he also appeared in The Long, Long Trailer with Lucy and Desi, as well as The Facts of Life with Lucy and Bob Hope. That's the 1960 movie, The Facts of Life, not the 80s TV show. Just to clarify. Desi's camera stand-in and lighting stand-in, Bennett Green, was the photographer. Richard Reeves, who we previously saw in Be a Pal and The Gossip, appears here again as Bill Foster. And he's one of Ricky's friends that comes in dressed up with him and Fred at the end, one of the assassins.
Yeah, because I didn't recognize either of those guys.
Yeah, so we had seen him before, but since he was all in costume, it's easy to miss that. But we talked about him on that episode, The Gossip. So if you would like to know more about him, you can go back and re-listen to that. It's a good one. Gil Herman played Joe, and he was the other friend, the other assassin. He was born in 1918, and he got seriously involved in acting during his time in the Air Force. He was in, like, the plays that they would stage for the servicemen.
Oh, cute.
Sometimes he would, like, produce them. And he actually went on to become an executive at CBS, and he was a producer there for many years. But he did keep acting on and off, doing small parts here and there. He had small roles in I Was a Male War Bride with Cary Grant, which is an absolutely insane movie.
And it sounds like it would be.
If you've ever wanted to see Cary Grant in drag, that's your movie.
You know, I didn't know that I wanted to, but now I kind of feel like I do.
I have to disclaim, he's a prettier man than a woman.
Oh.
So.
That happens a lot in comedy.
It happens a lot in comedy, and also with certain features, it happens a lot in drag.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
And The Tender Trap with Frank Sinatra and Debbie Reynolds, and he also did a voice on the animated series Wait Till Your Father Gets Home, which I didn't remember at all until I saw it on his credits when I was doing the research for this, and then I was like, oh yeah, I remember that show, because I used to watch it every now and then when it would come on Cartoon Network, and it was around the same time in the 90s when that game Don't Wake Daddy was a big thing. And I, like, would conflate them in my mind.
Yeah.
His father and daddy.
Yeah.
So that's actually about it for production notes. There wasn't a whole lot to go into today. Which is good, because I'm sure we're going to have a lot to discuss about the episode.
Yeah.
So, there were a lot of accents and cultural stereotypes in this one. And it is kind of yikes.
Yeah.
It's more of the racism yikes kind of stuff, but you know, to me, up until the end, I would say it doesn't really feel like they're making fun of these cultures. It kind of feels like they're using them as a prop to make fun of the whole idea of media and fame and, you know, the institution of celebrity and all of that, and Ricky's ego.
Yes.
But it's still a little uncomfortable. And then by the time we do get to the end of the episode, it is more like, you know, the violence of the other.
It's
like, look at these Middle Eastern people and how they behave, and let's use that to scare our wives, which is also, like, it escalated quickly.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure that that prank punishment is really worth the crime of Lucy trying to help Ricky.
Yeah. No, and the thing is that he was in the paper.
Yeah.
So it did work.
Yeah, exactly. He got the attention, and, you know, because this was before you could quickly Google a country and be like, wait a minute, I've never heard of Afghanistan. It's easier to get away with that sort of thing back then.
Yeah.
And
especially since nobody wants to admit that they don't know.
Exactly. No one called him on it, and no one stopped by the library to, like, look at a map of the world.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was all very interesting. And I do like that Lucy had this desire to, like, earn her own money and show how capable she is and prove that she could do this. So that was really cool. This was, like, one of those times where she pulled a scheme, but it wasn't necessarily, like, I want to get in the show. It was kind of...
Yeah, I want to help.
Yeah, I want to help. I want to, you know, show some self-sufficiency here. It's in a weird way, adds a little depth to the character.
Yeah.
So that's
I like how
fun.
It's outside the realm, though, to just, like, call up the newspaper and be like, I'd like to place an ad.
Yeah. Well, see, placing an ad, that's not so exciting.
No.
Anybody could have an ad, and then, you know, they're always in the same section of the paper. You just flip past them. You don't even read them.
So what we need is fraud.
Yes. Is it fraud, really, if no one's making money? It's kind of just lying for the sake of lying at that point. So that's...
Yeah.
That's fun.
That's wild.
It's very wild. What did you think?
Well, apart from the elephant in the room, which actually, I feel bad about that expression. Yes. Apart from the obvious, let's say. There we go. I feel like there are a number of ways they could have pulled off the same story without going there specifically.
Yeah.
But that being said, it wasn't, I don't know. In my white opinion, it wasn't, like, directly insulting. It wasn't making fun of the culture. It was just... It was kind of exploiting the otherness, though. It's like, how can we come up with a culture that's so far outside our understanding that no one even knows what this country is and isn't going to question it? Oh, the subcontinent. That's the one. It could have been anywhere in Europe. It could have, God forbid, anywhere in Africa. Or, you know... the South Pacific or whatever, but so it's just like that's uncomfortable. And there are some tiny countries in Europe.
Yeah,
there are some real ass city states in Europe. They could have just been like, you know, just pick a city and be like, oh, did you know that's actually a sovereign country?
Yeah.
So there is that option, but apart from that, the actual like plot of the story was really funny, and I felt like when we get into favorite lines, I felt like this is one of those situations where the plot itself is funnier than most of the actual lines.
Yeah.
So it was a well, from a plot perspective, it was a well-written story.
Yeah. It is.
I just wish they hadn't used those details.
Like, I feel like having that there kind of holds it back from being even better than it could be, because it's hard to enjoy it thoroughly when you're kind of cringing about things like that. But and I do feel like it's interesting and kind of uncharacteristic for I Love Lucy that we don't see a scene of Ricky and Fred realizing that that was Lucy and Ethel, deciding to get back at them and doing that. And I'm certain that the reason is time constraints because you have 25 minutes more or less.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like that would have added to it maybe, but
I also can't believe that they actually went ahead and got a room at the Waldorf. Mm-hmm. Like, how much did that cost?
Probably a lot.
A lot for a gag.
Yeah.
But only just so that if Kenny did call the Waldorf, which he did, they would confirm that she was there.
But also, if any of the reporters, because Lucy was like, okay, let's keep calling. She was calling all the newspapers.
Yeah.
So if anybody from one of the papers called and there was no one staying there, the whole gag would have been, you know, the jig is up, as they say,
yeah,
at that point.
But, so, like, would that have cost more than Kenny's $50 a week?
Probably.
Yeah.
But Ricky wasn't even really concerned as much about the money. He was concerned about his career stalling, yeah, and, you know, not really being exposed to a new audience, and which I think, as creatives, we, mm-hmm, all get that, even if,
oh,
it is,
sure,
it is funny to,
you love your regulars, but, yeah, you do need growth.
Yeah, even if it is funny to have, you know, Ricky's ego be on display, it's also just like, I get where he's coming from, and I get why he wants, you know, more people to,
yeah,
come,
definitely,
and see him. But it's also just like, it's a bit convoluted, the way everything works,
yeah,
out. But, I mean, it's a sitcom, it's very silly, it's supposed to be,
yeah,
so you can't fault it too much, but it's also just like, that's probably why this isn't anybody's, like, you know,
yeah,
favorite episode.
Yeah.
Although, apologies to anyone if this is your favorite episode. You might
go
exist,
back and
you
rewatch Lucy Writes a Play, and,
yeah,
then
that's a good one.
Let us know if it's still your favorite,
yeah,
episode.
Also, the freezer. That one hit harder this time,
mm-hmm,
than on previous rewatches for me, and I was like, ooh, what a gift.
It hit me in a lot of places.
Yeah. I think that's probably why,
yeah,
it's more personal now, but anyways.
That's a lot of meat.
Yeah. Oh, so much meat. Are you ready for pop culture?
Always. That's my favorite part.
Me too. So, I'm assuming you all know about the Miss America pageant. We had a reference to that. However, if you would like me to discuss that, you know what I need you to do. 5-star review and request it specifically. We got another reference and a whole scene, like we said, in the Waldorf Astoria, which we covered in the Pioneer Woman episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was fun. It was cool seeing inside the room. They had a
very simple room.
Yeah, it was very simple, but that's because it's a set.
Yeah.
But they did have a print of Thomas Gainsborough's painting, The Blue Boy, hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
Is that the one that got whipped?
Yeah.
We love a Gainsborough.
Yeah. So, Tiddlywinks. That's a game that was invented in 1888, and you play it by shooting little discs into a pot.
Fun fact, I swallowed one of those one time as a kid, and we had to go to the hospital.
Did you get it out?
Yeah.
So no,
it's still in there.
So that's good news.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, there are, like, Tiddlywinks championships to this day, so.
I could not compete in that. I'd just be,
yeah,
just hoovering them up.
Snack time.
Yeah. The challenge is to eat them, right? They are.
No carbs.
No carbs.
Put a little butter on there.
Yeah.
I'll make them go down smoother.
Yeah.
So, Benny Goodman.
My dude.
Yes. So, he was a jazz clarinetist and band leader born in 1909. As a child, his father would take him and his siblings to free concerts in Chicago's Douglas Park. And that is where he kind of developed his love of music, which is very cool. And it's also really cool that his dad was like, I want these kids to have some culture.
Yes.
And then, you know, they didn't have a lot of money, but he still paid for music lessons for the kids. So he started playing clarinet when he was 10, and he actually started getting professional work at the tender age of 13.
Oh, good for him. Well, I mean, not great, but good that he was,
yeah,
accomplished.
But he did, like, you know, finish school and everything,
oh,
so it's
good.
Not like some of those child celebrities where it's like, get out here!
Yeah.
Get out of that schoolroom! Put that book down! But
Benny Goodman is one of my favorites. Like, when I'm having a chill afternoon, it's nice to have a bit,
yeah,
of Benny Goodman.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he went on to become one of the most important and influential jazz musicians of all time, and his 1938 concert at Carnegie Hall,
ooh,
sort of introduced jazz to the mainstream.
Yeah.
And fun fact, he also led one of the first integrated jazz groups.
Oh, good for him.
Because,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, back in the day, they were like,
mm-mm,
no mixing, and he was like, I need to mix them up.
Okay, but if you can jam.
Yeah.
You
got
over here.
I gotta have the good musicians here, and music is a universal, yeah, colorless language.
Yes. Body and Soul, you guys, look that up.
Yeah, it's a good song. So, Queen for a Day, that was a TV and radio show that ran from 1946 to 1964. And there were revivals of it in 1969 and 2004,
oh,
which is recent enough that some of us were alive to,
yeah,
see it, which is cool.
We were in high school.
We were.
Yikes.
And... it's wild.
Yeah.
And I believe Monique was the host of that.
Oh.
The actress Monique, who was on The Parkers as the mother.
Hmm.
It's a little black culture for you. So
the premise, we could always do with more black culture.
I think so. The premise of that show is that they would have a few contestants on. They're usually women because they're competing for the title of queen for mm-hmm. the day. And
we watch a different show. People yeah. competing for that title.
You get to be queen for a whole however long until there's a new one.
Yeah.
But on this show, the women would come out and they would all tell their stories. Like, it'd be like, so what's been going on in your life? What do you need help with? And the woman would be like, well, my son has got, you know, I don't know why I was going to say narcolepsy, but my son has got some fatal illness and I need X amount of dollars to pay the doctor to treat him. And also there's a, you know, hole in my roof and I also need the new, you know, tires on the car. And you have like all of your sob story and like, you know, you have to cry and tell the whole thing. And there would be several ladies telling their sad story. And then the audience would, via a show of applause, pick at the end the winner, who was, you know, the woman with the saddest story, typically. Mm. And she would get to be queen for a day. And they would put her on a throne and they'd put, like, a crown on her and some roses. And they would, like, sing a song or something. I don't know. And then they would, like, the things that she needed help with, they would help her with that. But there were also, like, generic prizes, too. And it would be like, you know, oh, and you also win this pressure canner.
Yay!
If, like, you know, the pressure canner company was the sponsor of the episode, stuff like that. So that was...
All American sponsor us.
Please do. So that was a whole thing for a very long time, and it's cool that Ethel's, what was it, aunt won that.
Yeah.
Right, on to the music. I Get Ideas is a tango canción, which is a tango with lyrics, and the music was written in 1927 by Julio Cesar Sanders, who was Argentinian.
Hey.
And the English language lyrics that Ricky sings were written by Dorcas Cochran in 1951. And a bunch of famous people have recorded their versions of this song, including Peggy Lee, who we talked Ooh. About before. Fun fact, Lucy is going to perform this song in season 5
oh.
in an absolutely batshit episode that I can't wait for you to see.
Oh boy, the look on your face. You guys, you should see it. It's manic.
It's a really fun episode.
That was a really fun face.
Yeah. Well, that's my face. And also we hear Ricky performing his signature song, Babaloo, of course. And we discussed that in our episode on the audition. And you can go back and listen to that if you would like to hear the thoughts we shared at the time.
I actually have a piece of information.
Yes.
It is not technically pop culture. It's just culture. The daughter of a Maharaja is a Maharaj Kumari.
Nice.
And the son or heir apparent of a Maharaja is a Maharaj Kumar. So it's not a Maharinsis.
I figured that was wrong since they made it up and pulled it out of their asses.
I just figured since we were like, that's racist and wrong, we should probably be like,
yeah, give some this real
is
information.
The actual term.
I appreciate that. Yeah. That's good to learn the actual words.
Yes.
So, appreciate that.
Maharaj Kumari, nice. Scheherazade Afghanistan.
Yes. Which is between, what was it, Switzerland and...
Persia.
And Persia.
Which is modern-day Iran.
Yes. I should have remembered that because that was one of the lines I wrote down. Anyways, favorite lines.
Favorite lines, yes. I have a number of them. So, like I said, most of the situational comedy for me was funnier than the actual lines, but I did have a few. So back when they're at the Waldorf Astoria and they're complaining about how tired they are, Lucy said 25 numbers and every other one was Babaloo. If I had to faint one more time, I'd have fainted.
Yeah, I wrote that one down too.
And then when the guys are like, you know, we know you're royal because you have the black and red hair. She said, I'm not a Maharinsis, I'm a Henorinsis.
I wrote that one down too.
And then when Ricky revealed that he knew it was her all along, he said, who else but you would listen to me sing 25 songs and ask for more? Which I thought was funny, but also cute.
It is very sweet. I wrote down when Lucy says, you don't know any royalty, do you? And Ethel says, my aunt was queen for a day once, because I just thought that was cute. And Ricky, when he said, you know, it's tucked right in between Switzerland and Persia.
We were on the same page this time.
We were. And it looks like that's about it for today, unless you have any other thoughts that you would like to share.
No, I thought that was broadly fun.
Yeah.
a little, I was warned that it would be cringe, and I was like, well, it's I Love Lucy. There's always a moment when I have to hide my head.
She cringes a lot, and they're not always justified, in my opinion. But I feel like this one was justified cringing. But, you know, it's an overall fun episode, and there was definitely no ill intent behind anything.
No.
So, that's always the takeaway. For me, anyways. But, please do join us next week when we'll be discussing Lucy Gets Ricky on the Radio.
Oh.
In which Lucy realizes Ricky is, like, too genius for her to keep him all to herself.
You're welcome, Ricky.
Yes.
Look at that, publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see. I look forward to it.
Me too. And thank you guys for joining us this week, and we hope to see you again. Bye.
Bye.
Subscribe to us on your favorite podcatcher to make sure you never miss an episode.
And follow us on Instagram at MyFavoriteRedhead, on Tumblr and Facebook at MyFavoriteRedheadPodcast.
Tweet us at MyFaveRedhead or drop us a line at MyFavoriteRedheadPodcast@gmail.com.
And if you love Lucy and you enjoy our show, give us a good rating and review.